Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Good evening, and welcome to another Tuesday Night Nesca Family Podcast. This is Bailey Smith, speaking to you from South Florida. Tonight is usually open mic night, and we have a guest, a coho guest, that joins us. We are supposed to have Carlotta Taylor, who is usually with us once a month. She's from Mississippi, and she has not called in yet, so I'm hoping she is going to be with us because she always has a fascinating story. And my co-host Trailer Bill has not called in either. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about Carlotta. Carlotta is a survivor of abuse by her own family and foster care. After searching for her purpose for years, she learned it was to share her story and inspire others who may be going through what she endured in her life. She wrote a book called No More Flinching, where she outlined 5 key steps to overcoming adversity. She's a former homicide detective, child protection detective, and former federal officer with over 15 years in law enforcement experience. She knew she had to use her knowledge and wisdom to affect greater change and around the community. She's the founder of Somebody's, a non-profit foster children, teens, and adults. I remember speaking with her not very long ago, and she was talking to us about the speaking that she's been going around doing speaking engagements, and that she had started a non-for-profit organization to help those, which is the organization called Somebody Step In, for teens that have aged out of foster care and have nowhere to go or have no idea what to do next. And I was fascinated by her story and what she had done, you know, had taken from her experience and had started different organizations and wrote a book and all of that. So I'm going to hand the mic over to Bill because, first of all, please call in, even if our guest is not here. 646-595-2118, 646-595-2118. Again, this is Bailey Smith, and I'm welcoming you to tonight, Tuesday Night Family, Nesca Family Podcast. And here is Bill. What's going on, Bill?
Hey, Bailey. Howdy.
good.
A lot better
than Sunday.
I've just sent a text message.
I said a lot better than Sunday.
I just sent a text message to Carlotta. So I'm waiting to hear back from her. I could also call her, but of course I'd have to put you on hold to do that, but that's up to you. But I did send her a text.
I had asked Jill if she knew anything, and she said she's on the schedule, but so far the last couple of times there has been an issue. You could put me on hold. I mean, I'll just ask.
She is on the schedule,
right.
And Carol has been doing. Can I speak now?
Yeah, I'm quiet.
She is on the schedule, and Carol has done a pretty good job of calling people ahead of time at the beginning of each week to remind them. So let me go ahead and put you on hold for a moment, and I'll go ahead and call her. And I'll be right back, okay? And I'll let you know what I came up with. Okay, thanks.
No worries. So I'm going to talk a little bit. Last night we had a really, really amazing guest. And her name is Mary Ann. And Mary Ann Petrie. And hopefully she's listening. She really hit home for a lot of the panelists that had called in with her story. And we were talking about the judicial system when it comes to children and judges and lawyers and custody, which is a very big problem, and it's in every single state. We have a very, very, very broken system, and I listen to so many stories, and it's repetitive. Everybody has a different story, but it's so, so similar. And, you know, I related to it a lot. My girlfriends related it to a lot. The other panelists that had called in related to it a lot. And I think that Mary Ann was kind of surprised that there were other people that related to her story. So I hope we have another show like that in the near future. And in the meantime, we have another caller. Oh, that's Bill. Let's put Bill back on.
This is me, okay? I did call her.
Yep.
And she texted me back. She said, oh, my, I'm hosting an event, and I totally miscalculated my time. I don't know what that means. She did not say anything about our show. But anyway, she is alerted to the fact that she was on the schedule for tonight. And now I've reminded her. So that's where we are.
Remember somebody saying she would fill in. Let's see. Pamela Elaine Lockridge. You want me to send her a message? She's been on the show, I believe. Pamela.
Say again.
Elaine. Pamela Elaine.
Yeah. What about her?
She's the Alabama ambassador for NASCA.
Yeah.
She said she would fill in.
What are you asking me to do?
No, I could message her.
Okay, go ahead. Sure.
I'm texting.
All right, so I'll talk a little bit about NASCA. Those of you who don't know NASCA, this could be an exciting night for you because NASCA is a wonderful organization. If I don't say so myself, full disclosure, I founded NASCA, but it is a wonderful organization. It's been in existence for about a dozen years, and there are many thousands of NASCA members. We have many, many projects that we do, and the hub for everything is the NASCA website at NASCA.org, NASCA.org. And this is the thing. We want you to know that there's no requirement for NASCA membership except a desire to heal and recover. That's it. There's no dues or fees. We're self-supporting through our own contributions. We're not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. We don't get into any controversy. We neither endorse nor oppose any cause. We're only here to deal with issues of child abuse and trauma. And there are people involved in NASCA from every walk of life, believe me. And we have every kind of story being told, every kind of life being lived, every kind of ethnic group represented, male, female, gay, straight, black, brown, green, orange, and red people, purple people. I'm a purple people, I hope. I try to be purple. We have, all of us are volunteers. There's no paid members at NASCA, not even myself. And it really functions very well on this basis. So we hope that you will enjoy tonight's show and see it as an opportunity to learn a little bit about our organization, certainly, but also to check out the website. And what I recommend is that when you go to the website, you seek out the page that's called the Highlights page, and it's pretty easy to find. It says Highlights in big letters. Click on Highlights, and you'll go to a set of pages, actually, a descriptive page, which talks about over 30 of the things that NASCA does, and there's more than that, but the main 30 things that we do. And as I say, every one of them is free. Every one of them is there for you to use or not use. It's up to you. And we hope that you will really find it interesting. For example, we're doing Zoom meetings 3 days a week on Sundays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays. This is a new program. And they're in the afternoon so that they're not opposed to this meeting, talk show in the evenings. But Sundays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, they are hosted by a couple of us who lead the meetings, and they're topic-driven meetings. The topic usually arises from a discussion that begins with people sharing. They raise their hands, they get called on, they share. It's a wonderful way to be involved at NASCA and to be right away immersed in a group dynamic, because there are about roughly 15 people on each call, so everyone has multiple opportunities to share for 3 to 5 minutes on whatever topic's being discussed, and multiple opportunities then to share during the meeting. The other thing that's brand new that we're doing, which we're excited about, is if you are an author and you've appeared on the NASCA radio show here, the Stop Child Abuse Now radio show, we now have what we call a book list for authors who've appeared on SCAN shows. And we're compiling that now. We're about halfway through. But over the years, we've done about 3,000 shows, and many of them have featured people who have written books. So if you've been on the show before and you've written a book, your name and book and so forth will appear on this brand new project, the book list. And if you're interested in being on the book list, all you need to do is sign up to be on a show. And when you're an author and you've been on the show, your book will automatically begin to appear on the book list, and it'll stay there. And so it's hopefully an appeal, too, to folks who have written books to come on and be our special guests. Now, we have a special guest, Need, on Friday, which was a surprise to us. The gal who was scheduled for Friday can't make it. So we have an opening, and that's unusual that we have one this close to the actual show. But on the 10th, Friday the 10th, we're not yet booked a guest. So if you're out there and you're thinking about it, don't think anymore. Get in touch with me, and we'll set you up because it's really easy to do the shows. And with a minimal amount of information that I need, including a small bio about your life, I can book you in a few minutes, really, certainly within an hour or so, of your contacting me. You'll be booked and all set to go. Now, if you can't make it on Friday, don't worry. The current schedule will tell you any place that's got a gray background, it'll say not yet booked on. And so if you go to the current schedule and look at it, you will notice that there are numerous other dates coming up with that are gray, not yet booked. And, of course, we need special guests for all of those, too. Now, it sounds to me like I might have Bailey back. Let me just check. Are you here, Bailey?
Yes, I'm here. And Pamela Elaine from Louisiana has been kind enough to be our co-host guest. And if you don't mind, I don't really know much about her story. I don't think I was on a show with her. Maybe I was. I told her that you would introduce her first. So you can introduce her a little bit, and then we'll put her on.
Sure.
I don't have any information on her in front of me.
Well, I don't have it in front of me, so I'm just going to go ahead and open her mic and say, Pamela, refresh our memory. You're from Louisiana, and you've been on the show before, of course. Can you introduce yourself slightly to some of the listeners? I don't want to be inaccurate.
Yes, sir. Pamela Elaine Lockridge from Louisiana, and I was the one that was sexually abused from the age of 4 to 18. My mother actually sold me or pimped me out to her second husband for all those years. I didn't find
right.
that out till I was in my 50s, and so, you know, I have a pretty horrific story, but over the years I've been able to, you know, have therapy, and also I earned my master's in social work, which helped me, you know, understand some things and how to turn my narrative around into a positive narrative to help others.
Sure. And actually, you haven't been on the show for quite some time. I just looked it up, and it was in the middle of June of 2018 that you did a show. So it's and I'm looking at the I'm now looking at the bio that you have there. So I'll tell people you are the author of a book. So your book is going to appear on this new list I was just talking about, new project. The book's name is I Was a Whore at 4, and it's the redemptive story of a child sex slave. And that, I do, of course, recall it now that I see it in front of me. So you're welcome to be here. Thank you so much for jumping in here last minute and being our special co-host tonight, our guest tonight.
I'm also the Alabama ambassador, and I've had people
excellent.
Call me from around the nation. They'll call me if they're depressed, and, you know, I'll talk to them and just let them know to get with NASCA and, you know, stay with y'all and just, you know, talk to our family, you know.
Isn't that wonderful? That's terrific. Now, let me explain to people what the Ambassador Project is all about, because you bring it up, but I don't know how many people really know what it is. It's an attempt NASCA has made for some years now to find at least one person in each state, and sometimes there's more than one, but at least one in every state and every province, and now in every country we can find, which we call our ambassador to that state. So in your case, Alabama. And we list you as the Alabama ambassador. And therefore, when people are looking for someone they can talk to in the region, they might look to Alabama, even though they live in Louisiana. Or, you know, you don't have to call the same. But you're obviously, if you're on the list, then you're willing to, you know something significant about NASCA and are ready to answer some questions and help a person get involved. So that's what an ambassador is, and it's a volunteer position. And I'm delighted that you're doing that job. That's wonderful.
Thank you. You know, we're all a family here. We have to support one another.
That's right. We call ourselves the NASCA family. As a matter of fact, you might find it interesting, Pamela. A couple of times recently, I've gotten phone calls from people, and I generally ask how they find out about us, you know, because I like to know how our name is spreading. And it is spreading significantly. It has for years now. So twice now recently, I've been told that hotlines have given out our phone number to people. And that's really great. That's just an indication, Pamela, that it's working because, you know, we don't self-promote. You know, we don't have like a promotional, you know, plan that we do. People just talk about us and they talk about us to each other. And the name has spread around now to such a degree that we're recognized even by other groups and the resource for them, even as far away as hotline numbers when people call in and they're having an issue and they bring up child abuse. So I think that's great, really great.
Well, me and Mark have been traveling, going to conferences and having conference tables over the last few years, and we've put out the NASCA sheet, and a lot of people are like, I've never heard of them, you know. And so we've given out a lot of sheets. But, of course, now, you know, we're going to have to do it more social media because of the COVID.
That's correct. And we have a set of tools that can be used for the thing that you're talking about when we get back to it. And people will find them on our website, too, under promotional tools. But they include things like baseball hats and T-shirts and pens and, you know, refrigerator magnets, but also things that would help you put on a display like a tablecloth and little signs and things like that. So, and also business cards. Anybody can order a NASCA business card and put in their own name and their own email address and phone number and call themselves a member of the NASCA family or a member of NASCA. And, you know, you can distribute them. So,
do we get them from you or just make our own business cards?
No, it's under, it comes actually through Vistaprint, where we have a section on Vistaprint that they can be ordered. And you type in your own name and address and so forth. So you go to, you know, the red pull-down menus on the front page of the website? In the first column, there's the second to last item of the first column says promotional tools. And when you click on that, that takes you to the Vistaprint section that features NASCA products. Some are expensive, like the tablecloth is expensive. Some are medium priced, like the T-shirts. And some are really cheap, like the magnet and the pens and the business cards. So you have a lot of options of things to get for yourself that can be used as, you know, handouts and so forth. So, yeah.
Do you remember what month in 2018 you
yes.
Pam was on I'm going to
June
8th,
2018.
June.
Right in the
my
middle
scan
of the page.
Number's 1895.
That's correct.
I'm going through the I'm not going through scans, I'm going to the actual year so I can see your bio.
Yeah, 2018. it's down about a little more than halfway down the page. It's show 1895, and it's the date of 6/08.
I was starting from December. I was working my way down from December.
Down. You just pulled the page down.
Yeah.
Oh, you're on a phone?
Yeah.
Are you on a phone?
I'm doing it on my
phone. Oh, no.
I'm doing it from my phone. I can't do it from my computer because then I'm scared I'll knock myself off.
Okay.
I'm almost there.
So as I was saying, Pamela, that is an excellent thing to do, to go out and into the community. Of course, we're a nonprofit organization, so you can, if you want, request donations and so forth and then send them to us. But that's not the purpose. More of the purpose is to promote the name, you know, and the effort and all the tools that we have, which are significant. We have a lot of things for people. You know, so I'm really glad you called in. Thank you, Bailey, for thinking of this. This is great.
Well,
yeah,
we connected. How did we connect? I don't remember.
I don't either. It was just recently, though.
Right. And then I said to you, I said sometimes we're short a host or co-host, and you're like, let me know, and I'll
and I'll be glad to fill in. So I thought of you tonight. I don't see it on June 18th.
No, June.
But I want, yeah.
June 8th, 2018.
8th, June 8th. So I wanted to say I've been doing some of my own podcasts. I just did one geared to the Jewish community, sharing my story, which I sent you a link, Pamela. I don't know if you got a chance to listen to it. And I'm doing one. It'll be out August 1st for the morning podcast, Vincent something on mental health. And then I was sharing my story and using the mental health portion. But my point is that I always mention NASA. So I kind of try to promote you that way. I'm proud to be a part of NASA. And I always bring it up. Okay, I found you. Do you mind if I read a little bit?
Your show.
Okay. So tonight, thank you, Pamela Elaine Lockridge from Roboline, Louisiana, for stepping in last minute. Pam has talked about her horrendous past as a child sex slave from the age of 4 to 18. She's also revealed how she was finally able to escape the lifelong terror of her captor. Pamela is a new member, not anymore, at the time was a new member of NASCA, and she is the author of the book I Was a Whore at Four. That's terrible. The redemptive story of a child sex slave. As she writes, Pamela realizes that the end of her life as a child sex slave was the beginning of a beautiful life ordained by her loving Father in heaven, which she could have never imagined possible. Are you referring to God?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. When the time finally arrived for her to confront all the living family members about her child's sexual slavery abuse, Pamela discovered a mind-blowing sequence of events which answered the most significant question of all. Who was complicit in her child's sex slavery so many years ago? As she searches for complete closure, Pamela likens this journey to the unraveling of an Afghan. Sorry, somebody's trying to call me. As an Afghan. Sorry. I hope you don't, guys. You don't hear that. Okay. As an Afghan, as she located and pulled the one string that exposed the total meaning behind her life's pain and suffering. The book, I Was a Whore at Four, presents an actual therapy Pamela created called the Grief Narrative Therapy, GSPNT, which it'll be nice if you can explain that after, based on the stages of death and dying. I took these stages and added three more to create a therapy that can be used by professionals to help individuals with their loss of sexual innocence as a child. Pamela explains the therapy found within its pages will fast-track victims and survivors to becoming strong advocates. So I would love to know what that means, GSPNT, but from what I hear, being on the show and listening, is that writing a book is very, very healing. That's what I know, that when I journal whenever I'm really in a bad place and I start to journal, to me it's painful. So I know that it's a book. I need to write a book, especially after last night's show. I definitely need to write a book. Share my story, because it's happening to so many people. And I assume that it will finally shut the door to my, you know, it'll be the last chapter and close that door, and I'll hopefully finally heal.
but I'm sure that it is very healing once it's all done. Okay, let's go back to you, and I would love to know what Oates narrative. That's what you look, right? Therapy. Three stages
yes.
of narrative therapy. Okay.
Well,
so,
you know, when
away.
I was going to... Okay.
Yeah.
Well, when I was going to social work school, you know, we had to learn many therapies or theories. And one of the theories that I came upon was stage theory. And the one lady that used stage theory much in her, or what she found was that people that are dying go through stages of death and dying. And the stages are denial, anger, bargaining, acceptance, and there's one other one, and I'll have to think of it in a minute. But I took those five stages, the loss of sexual innocence. Like I would remember, I'd go through denial and want to, you know, just act like it didn't happen, right? And then I would get angry sometimes about it. You know, why did it happen to me? You know, why wouldn't I protect it? And then, of course, bargaining, you know, to try to think, you know, if I could find something that I could, you know, become so that I wouldn't have to remember. And then acceptance, you know, is finally, you know, giving in and thinking that I don't have to worry about it anymore because, you know. But when I equated that to the loss of my sexual innocence, it didn't seem to complete with that fifth stage. It I found the stage striving and thriving and also closure. And since then, I've also written a workbook for the client to take to their therapist, and in addition to reading the book. And so, you know, I recommend that when a person is working in closure, because once closure happens, and people don't understand, you just think it's closed and you never remember again. No, that's not true. But it doesn't affect you anymore. You know, you're completely closed off to it. And how I came to that point was my stepdad went in and confessed and when I was 52. And
wow.
There's a story behind that. I think Bill's kind of going to remember it now. And when he confessed, he opened up a civil suit, okay, because he broke my privacy right by taking it public. And he did a tort injury to me because it opened up a case, because the law enforcement, when he went to him, didn't know the dates of when this happened. So they had to open an actual case and then come to me and try to get me to tell them, you know, when this happened. So it caused me to go back into the hospital and get a diagnosis of PTSD. And so we went to court. It took 5 years. They fought it tooth and nail. They got the most prominent criminal court attorney in Louisiana, and he fought it. You know, they're elderly, so he was probably telling them all along, oh, y'all are going to win. We're going to win this. She's not going to win. And so it went to the appellate court, Louisiana appellate court twice, and the Louisiana Supreme Court twice. After it went to the Louisiana Supreme Court that second time, they had no more ability to try to stop the suit, okay? So then it was going to go to actual court within the next 2 weeks. And so they said, well, the attorney finally said, let's sit down and try to settle this. And so my attorney was in agreement. I thought that he was going to take it all the way to court, you know. But what happened was he did a focus group, and the people, and see, this the civil case is different, because when it happened the way it did, it was like he was, they were only going to be able to hear about the abuse forward, okay? In other words, they couldn't get him from the past, for the past abuse, just for the abuse that he had caused me from going forward. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, in adulthood, the damage you've done as an adult, right?
Right, right. And so he didn't think that the focus group, or he didn't think that the court would think I was damaged that much from that point on. You see what I'm saying? So
right.
He didn't want to take a risk. He didn't want to take a risk, and I was ready for closure. And also he said that if the court would have awarded me anything, he could have filed bankruptcy. And with all that in mind, I said, I just want this over with. And so we did settle. And I pretty much got his savings is what happened. And, you know, I wasn't really after that. Money, you know, no amount of money can address, you know, what happened to me and what I had to endure and live through. But, you know, the judge actually apologized me from the bench, and I just felt so validated. I mean, and that was closure, okay? I mean, when anybody believe you and that they're sorry for it, I mean, I've had people tell me they're so sorry that I went through it, and, you know, they don't have to say that, you know, but they really are. And I just wanted to read this one part out of my book. It says, can an individual ever get full closure and be restored to full mental functioning after the heinous acts of child sex slavery? I'm here to testify that it is a fact that closure is a given if the individual will work until it comes. And see, a lot of people think, you know, there's not work to this. You have to actually choose to work towards being healed. It's not just going to happen just on a whim. It's not going to, you're just not going to wake up one day and it's going to happen. And that's why when I have people buy the workbook or get my workbook, that, and even my book, I tell them, please do this with a mental health professional, because, you know, you really can't become an advocate, a full advocate, until you have really gotten closure. Because what will happen if you're not, don't become a full advocate and you get out there and try to tell your story or even write a book, you just can't write the full story. You don't have closure. You don't have your complete story until you have closure. So what you're going to do is you're going to write a partial story, you know, and then later you have to go back and revise it because you're going to realize later you came to closure. And let me tell you, in my workbook that I wrote, it says the three levels with which those who have been molested as children may relate. The first level is adult victims of childhood sexual abuse. You got to remember the first two words, adult victim, okay? Number one, they've never told anyone, or not more than one or two people. They've never received any knowledge of CSA being a crime against them. See, for a long time, I never knew it was even a crime. Pardon?
No, I said, uh-huh,
okay.
I'm sorry.
Has never told even a portion of their CSS story for fear of rejection. Has mental health problems from suppressing their feelings and memories. Has problems coping with their CSA, which is child sexual abuse, and self-medicates to escape the middle part of using prescribed opioids or street drugs. Has fear, shame, and guilt, and because they blame themselves. Okay, that's the adult victim. All right, when you get to the second level, adult survivor, they have begun to open up a little at a time about their story because they've begun to hear others open about their story. That's why NASCA is so important, because when people tune in and somebody tells their story, then the other person is like, hey, you know, it wasn't me all alone going through this. So many adults, victims think they're the only ones.
That's right.
And number,
that's right.
Number two, yeah, number two, they have begun to, this adult survivor has begun to seek efficient help and support they need through a multidisciplinary team of mental health professionals, legal professionals, law enforcement, the judicial system, supportive family members and friends and clergy, etc., who believe and validate their story. Now, see, I truly believe if I was talking to a victim or a survivor that was wanting to tell their story, I ask them always, I say, Is your perpetrator still alive? Does he still live in the same city as you? And I ask them, have you ever reported him to the police? And even if they don't live in the same city, I say, have you ever called law enforcement, tell them the person's name, tell them what happened? Well, they're probably not going to do anything anyway. Well, at least he's on the blotter, and if somebody else comes to them, they're going to believe. You see what I'm saying? Because those people aren't going to stop. I mean, just because they moved away doesn't mean they're not doing it to somebody else. So you need
Let me interject another reason for doing it, because I'm in the process of a legal battle with the Catholic Church, because my abusers were Catholic Church people. But even before I thought I had an opportunity to do that, it occurred to me that I should report the abuse that happened, even though it was 40 years earlier or something, because if you don't report abuse, it's a crime that never occurred. And I'm really anxious to make sure that the statistics that are gathered and used for child abuse are accurate. And so if I don't report the cases, and in my case it was multiple people, the cases that were that I remembered clearly, even if there's no opportunity for me to move forward with it, it'll be as if they never happened, and they won't get counted. So even on that, for that reason, I did report them, and then it turned out that New York State, where some of it happened, did change their rules last year, and they gave what's called a window, an opportunity, for older folks like myself who were still outside their new statute to come forward for 1 year. So I did, and sure enough, I'm in the mix of the people that are suing the church. Isn't that amazing?
Wow, that's awesome, Bill.
Yeah.
Yep. Hopefully it'll give you more closure.
I actually saw that online, and I was like, that's awesome. Who put forth that legislation?
Well, it's been tried in many, many states, of course, and we're advocates for this happening. Our preference would be that there'd be no statute of limit in any state. Now, there's two kinds
of
them.
That's right.
There's civil, which we've been talking about mostly, and then there's criminal. Criminal, of course, the prosecutors, if you can convince them that you have enough, you have to have enough evidence, right? Because they won't prosecute a case that they don't think they're going to win. So there has to
be
evidence. And the prosecutor brings the case. So the state brings the case against the individual on your behalf, but the state does that in the criminal court. And the result, of course, is a prison sentence. In civil cases, you bring the case against the individual or the institution privately, and it's in a different court system where the preponderance of the evidence is what matters. Not doesn't have to be hard facts beyond a reasonable doubt, which criminal does. It has to be more evidence than not that it occurred. And the person that presents more evidence than not generally wins. And, of course, the result in that is not a prison sentence. It's usually some kind of monetary compensation. So that's the difference. We want there to be no statute in any state for either one, and some states have done that, but most of them have a limited amount of time that you have from becoming an adult, perhaps 15 years, perhaps 20 years, whatever it is. And some places like New York, I think they had only 7 years So for years, people had been fighting to get that changed, and it finally succeeded last year. But they had to give up the unending type of statute, and it's still fairly long. But what they did get was, as they say, this window of opportunity for people who were still outside the new statute. So that's how I fit in. And as long as you file your suit now, it'll still be, it doesn't matter that the case isn't being heard yet. Mine, you know, it's going through a bunch of, you know, legal steps. But because I filed within the window, it'll still be valid when the time comes. So there you go.
Can I chime in here? I would like to just give out our number again. We have a different show than I posted. Thank you, Pamela Elaine Lockridge, for stepping in and covering, saving us tonight. Please, we'd love to have callers. We're alone. 646-595-2118. 646-595-2118. And if I could just ask a question. This went on between 4 to 18. How did it stop?
When I turned 18, my mother and my stepdad, I don't call him my stepdad, I call him her second husband because he wasn't anything to me. He didn't adopt us or anything. He didn't have guardianship over us. You know, he was just there. And whenever I turned 15, they divorced, okay? So I was, like, so relieved, you know, thinking, oh, God, I can get away from this man, right? Well, my mother went and got an apartment, and it had two bedrooms, and I had two sisters. They were never sexual abused. We were all three emotionally and physically abused, too. But my mother got an apartment with two bedrooms and said I couldn't live with her, that I had to go live with him. So, you know, I didn't, of course, I'm seeing all this hindsight, right? So, you know, it was still the part on her part. I'm sure he was still giving her money and everything, you know, for me to be there with him. So it was a true, prostitution thing going on. And so whenever when I was 15 years old, he had a car that I wanted. And he would always tell me, you know, when I turned 18, I could have the car. Because I think he knew at that point and at some time I was going to leave. And so I would have to do sexual favors for him, you know, for all that time. So when I turned 18, I could get that car. And when I turned 18 and had the car, I was able to leave and get a job and be on my own, you know.
Great.
So, anyway, you know, I was talking about the adult victim, the adult survivor. Number three under the adult survivor is they have sought out offline and online resources and organizations like NASCA who offer unique opportunities of forming groups and memberships of people who support one another along their journey to healing and closure through positive and validating dialogue. And the third one is adult advocates. They have reached a point in their life that an understanding of all their child sexual abuse has happened to them for a positive reason. Now, that's a very hard thing to get to, but you will actually get there, okay? You know, somebody could sit there and say, no, that can never happen. And I'm telling you, it has happened. Because one of the positive reasons for me is so that I could help others, okay? Number two has come to the mental health. Yeah.
has come to the mental health and wholeness through closure that gives them extreme courage to tell their stories to help enable other adults who have lived through CSA. And number three, has come to be able to reason that telling their narratives is part of their legacy to break generational child sexual abuse, and has written and told his story in various forms, such as seminars, corporate platforms, and books and book festivals. And so that's the difference between the three groups. And that, like I said, it's in the Grief Stages Plus Narrative Therapy Companion Client Workbook that goes along with my book, you know. And the reason I put those stages in there is because when somebody takes this book in there and they get me with their therapist, they're going to know where they fall within that. Are they a victim still? And some people remain victims. I mean, they just love being a victim. I mean, I don't know if they love being a victim, but they just can't see beyond being a victim, you know. And it's safe and it's comfortable and it, you see what I'm saying? They can't see beyond it.
Yeah.
Isn't that like Stockholm syndrome?
No,
I'm not sure.
It's just being stuck in stuck in the problem. You're just stuck, and you insist on, you know, that's the way it's going to be. It's really kind of belligerence more than anything else, you know. But it's not. I mean, I want to say, Pamela, that it's not necessarily their fault. This is a very strong thing, this thing we call child abuse trauma, and like you say, in terms of grief. The first level of grief is often denial, or one of the main original stages. Well, that's what they're in. They're in denial that, hey, I'm okay. So what if I'm angry all the time? So what if I yell a lot? So what if I can't hold a job? You know, like that. And they insist on that's it. And it's unfortunate because you can have, Pamela will tell us this, you can have such a comfortable life if you do the work that she's referring to. You can really succeed in your life beyond your wildest dreams, frankly. I mean, I'm a huge advocate for, you know, getting involved, like both feet, you know, jump in with both feet and do everything you possibly can and recognize that it's going to be hard. It is hard. I'm no denying it, but it's worth it, you know?
But that's why people wait so long, because like, 30s and 40s, you're real busy with your family, and you know, and you don't really have to deal with it. You can suppress it. But when you get in your 50s, and that's why a lot of people don't come forward to their 50s, because their nest is empty and there's not really much to do, and all you can do is sit around and ruminate what happened, you know. So
yes,
that's when I started getting help.
You never got help. You never got help when you were 18 and on your own?
No, you just lived your life? I went out. I was a wild thing. I went out and thought, you know, I was just like, it was like I was in a cage, a structured cage, and then I was let out as a domesticated animal to be out in the woods, you know? And I didn't have any social graces. I didn't have any guidance of to go do anything productive for myself. It was just go, you know, you see this with kids now, or, you know, you don't know how many of those kids that are out there partying and trying to kill themselves with drugs. You don't know how many of them are going to be used, you know?
Right.
Yep.
Because I don't know what, you don't know, I didn't even know it was a crime, for heaven's sake.
Yep.
So, anyway, 20, 30, you know, 40s, I was married, had my children, and then 50s, it's just like everything just kind of slows down for you, you know, and you have all the time in the world to think about it, and it comes back, and you're wondering why you're thinking about this. You never thought about it, you know, much before when you were busy. Why are you thinking about it? And it's just, I think it's the way God has humans, you know, that he has it to where it just works out. And let me tell you this too. If I think for a minute, what if at 18 I would have known to go to the cops and I would have told them all that happened, and there was actually some proof that I had, hypothetically,
What do you think would have happened to me? Do you think that they would have allowed me to live and you know, think my life was greater than their life?
Probably
I wouldn't
not.
Have lived. I know, that's what I'm telling you. I would. So I believe I was protected in that, you know?
I agree.
It's mind-boggling how people have been through this horrific action or crime. And I mean, there are many people, and a lot of them are in the NASCA family who never really healed properly. And, you know, then you have ones that did what you did. But it's very sad because there's so many people out there who never really lived a healthy, normal, whatever, quote unquote, normal life because they never got the proper help or they never admitted it. Or, you know, like I know many, many, many people who self-medicated. And in their teens or their 20s, young adult life, committed suicide, either overdosing or, and this is I'm talking about this generation now.
Why I want to help get my book out and get this therapy out so that these people won't have to wait till they're 50 or 60, you see,
right.
To give them hope now.
Right. And I'd much rather see our show tonight on the hope that's there. There's a lot of hope. And it really doesn't matter how far down the scale you've fallen. You know, I believe that hope is eternal, and it's all around us all the time, but you have to go get it. Pamela said it right. It doesn't just happen. It doesn't just descend on you, you know. You have to work for it, but it's worth the effort. And of course, NASCA is filled with people who will help you, that's what we're here for, to offer hope and then healing through all kinds of paths. We recognize all the different various paths. There's many different kinds of ways to heal, and we don't want anybody to miss the opportunity. So that's part of our message right now tonight. That we know there's people thinking out there who are new to this, maybe but, they're considering it, but they haven't done it yet. You know, that's okay. You know.
Can I read the introduction of my workbook for clients who will start the work?
Okay, let me just mention before you do that I have updated the description of tonight's show. To indicate that you are our guest tonight, okay? So, and also on the front page of the website. But that means that you have an additional show, a second show that you're featured on, okay? And it's episode number, if you want to write it down, 2437, okay?
Okay. Can I just type in and say one thing? Well, it's scan number 2437. He was saying.
Correct.
Okay.
And it's now listed on the it's corrected. It's correctly listed both on Blog Talk and on our schedule.
All right.
I just wanted to say something before you start with your workbook. In the Jewish community, they're a little bit behind the church coming out with. Childhood sexual abuse. But they're starting to come out now and bring awareness. And people that were very young and now adults are now coming forward, sharing their stories, and going after the institution where it happened, whether it was a camp, whether it was a school. And, you know, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that they some of it might have what to do with the fact that they changed the statute of limitations. But there are also organizations out there that are trying to, you know, get people to come forward, because my community, where I grew up, they're way behind this kind of stuff. This stuff was hush-hush under the rug, like it was for the church, except the church is way ahead. How long ago would you say the church system has started admitting or you know, people started coming forward? So,
well, I can tell you that in 2002, there was a big scandal that broke, and certainly ever since that point, the Boston scandal broke. And ever since that point, there's been a quickening of the pace for the church to start catch up. But there would be a lot of people, and I'm talking Catholic Church now, there'd be a lot of people who would say it still hasn't caught up. I mean, frankly, that's what they'd say. And they're probably right. This is not something that, you know, an institution like Judaism or Catholicism, you know, overcomes quickly. It takes a long time.
No.
And it's slow as molasses for some people. But I'd say basically in the new era, Bailey, 2002 was when it began.
Yeah. If she wants
sure
to really know,
so.
That maybe, if you want to really know about it, you might want to see that movie Spotlight. Was that a movie, Bill?
Correct.
There's a movie called Spotlight, and it's when it was really starting to be exposed, I think.
Yes.
Who's it by? Like who's the writer?
Oh, it won the Academy Award for Best Picture about 5 years ago, so it's not hard to find. It was the Best Picture Award 5 years ago. Yeah.
I don't know if it's still on Netflix.
I'll look for it.
Let's see. What was I going to tell you? The introduction in my workbook says, "This workbook is just what it says, work. Merriam-Webster defines work as activity involving mental or physical effort done in order to achieve a purpose or result. The work that is required to reach full mental health as an adult survivor of child abuse is not going to be easy, but it will be simple. Merriam-Webster defines reality as the world or the state of things as they actually exist, as opposed to an idealistic or non-rational idea of them or notional idea of them. And survivors must maintain themselves in the real world throughout the healing process as much as possible in order to receive wholeness and full closure. This means that as the individual using a workbook reaches hard and difficult places along the healing path, the more they do know activities such as turning to drugs or alcohol, the process of healing goes faster and smoother. For utilizing various support systems available to the survivor to keep from escaping the pain of the healing process is so vitally important to the healing. Merriam-Webster defines the word feelings as emotions, and the individual who's doing the work must maintain an ongoing active account of current feelings that are felt while doing the work of the workbook. These three words, work, reality, and feelings, are the three main points the workbook will highlight in order to get the work done in a successful manner. These are the central focal points throughout the course of completing the workbook. For without those focal points continually in view, the work will stagnate and lose its purpose.
Right.
So the workbook takes the healing through understanding the stages of death and dying, which they're denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. And then understanding narrative therapy, and then let's see, take them through looking at feelings, and then understanding feelings in therapy, types and levels of stress related to healthy boundaries, client understanding of prominent theories to aid them in their healing and closure process, getting to work. That's when the actual work starts, because it's kind of like a pre-work they're doing to understand that they're going to have feelings, they're going to have, you know, different things. And also I tell them in here, this is self-paced, you know, you don't have to go fast, you don't have to go, you know, there's no, this is all about them and not about the therapist or whoever, you know.
Yes.
And that's how,
very good.
Yeah, I sent you, Bailey, your copy of the workbook and the book. It's in the mail right now.
Thank you. I'm looking forward.
You're
welcome.
That's great.
Well, I don't know how people survive this kind of stuff. I mean, like you said, it takes a lot of work and years of work, I would assume.
Well, the one thing I've learned though is don't try to get a victim to become a survivor. Don't even try to get a survivor to become an advocate job. It, you know, our job is just be there for them and meet them where they are. And sometimes it can be so aggravating when a victim wants to or thinks that they can't move past it, and that's their belief system, and you can't change a belief system, you know. It has to come from within.
Right. You have to really, really want to
make a better life for yourself. And I think that that applies so many different things, whether it's to trauma or, you know, whatever anybody might have been through. But what really fascinates me, that so many survivors of childhood abuse become therapists. And
yeah,
when you became... Yeah, what were you going to say?
Oh, I was like, that's a good point.
Well, they're seeking, a lot of people are seeking to understand themselves, and they go to school for psychology to do that. And they eventually become therapists. And, you know, that's one of the options that people will take, to kind of over-educate themselves, because they feel terrible about who they are. But, you know, the degrees that they earn help them to think of themselves as worthy, and many of them do go into psychology, and then you know, get their masters and their doctorates and so forth. They end up with a lot of letters after their name, but they're not necessarily healed, because that's not how you get healed. You know, you don't get healed by studying it. You get healed by doing
exactly.
It. I think that's kind of what Pamela is saying. Yeah.
So I guess like the therapy part is like an extra thing on top, but the main thing is really working on from the inside and going through all the steps, you know.
Well, it's an inside job, whether or not you use, it doesn't matter what process you use. You could use psychology, of course, or life coaching, or 12-step program, or any other kind of you can use ministry. You know, if you are devoted to a specific ministry, you can use that, whatever tools they have. But also hypnosis and EMDR and, you know, journaling and all the tools that we have. But the point is, you don't heal by studying it. You heal by doing it. So a lot of these people think that if they finally understand themselves, then they're going to be able to feel different. And I say, no, you got to act differently, and then you'll feel differently. It's a matter of action for me, and it's really worked well for me. But it doesn't really matter to me, and nor to NASCA, by the way, anybody listening, what path you choose. Any of the ones that I've listed and many more, hypnosis, you know, I mean, there's so many things, art therapy, whatever. All of these things in whatever mixture helps you, as long as you are actually working on it and moving forward, you will begin to heal. But you don't heal by reading about it, you know, or studying it. You got to do it in some fashion.
Right. Along those same lines, I have a therapist, and will always have one as far as I'm concerned, because, you know, even though I say closure and complete healing, I mean, that's on a functioning level. You know what I'm saying? I'm mentally functional, I'm physically functional, but I'll never be, you know, like, never have that past. That'll always be part of me. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So when you're saying people that get the degree like myself, you know, does that mean I don't need a therapist?
No.
No, because what is a therapist exactly? It's somebody that someone who validates you, who comes along as, you know, and when you come in there, they you need by hearing you talk, and they actually become to the person in therapy the person that they need. Like, say I come in and I'm talking about my mother and things like that, and maybe some of the things she did, the therapist will actually take on the personification of my mother. Yeah, it's not obvious to me, to the client, but that's what they're trying to do. You see what I'm saying? And that's how people get healed. You know, they have someone that's kind of in that capacity that treats them different than their original mother did, or original, you know, father, dad did. You know,
right. Well, I'll tell you what. The for me, the best mixture of therapy, best way to heal is a mixture of having at least one person, like a therapist, perhaps a minister or a psychologist or whatever, or a life coach, but one person that can lead you in that way and that you're really transparent with. You know, you trust and you give over your secrets and so forth. But then secondly, in addition to that, that you get involved with a group, like NASCA, frankly, because you'll understand that you're not alone. One of the first things Pamela talked about, you're not alone. You know, there are so many of us, and we have to kind of come out of the woodwork and stand together, becoming a community, because there's great strength in knowing you're not alone and being a member of a family, you know, one among many. So this is the best mix, I think. You have one person that you can be really transparent with, but then an entire group that you can feel, as an insider, you're a big part of too, you know, and you have a lot to contribute, because you do. Everybody does.
Right.
Even Bailey.
even Bailey. Bailey's the one got me back here. Thank you, Bailey, for bringing me back.
Well, look, you know, we have to have somebody on. It couldn't be just me and Bill, because me and Bill, we go at each other.
No,
it would have been very. What was that?
No, of course, we had somebody. You like Carol?
How's Carol?
She's good.
Well, she does the Friday night shows.
Yeah. She always pushes me. Yeah, you know, we have a great, great family, really. But I was just looking at a post I had put up on Facebook, and I saw a lot of comments. So let me just ask you a question on yourself, okay? I know how it is for me, but do you ever have moments where you have a setback, you have your highs and lows, or are you totally, it's that part of your life is gone?
I'm sorry.
Highs and lows about what happened? No, I don't even think about it anymore, really. I'm telling you, when I went through that court case, and it was over for me. I didn't have any more dreams, like PTSD dreams or anything like that.
That's
right
amazing.
Now, the only thing I'm struggling with is trying to stay strong to run my race till the end, till I go home to heaven.
Right.
I keep my focus on the Lord. You know, I'm not putting my spiritual ideas on anybody else, but through it all, I got saved, and the Lord changed my heart. He transformed me from the inside out. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, when we get hurt, you know, we want to hurt others because we don't know what to do with our anger and hurt, and what that does is only hurt us more. So, you know, I've heard that forgiveness is taking care of ourselves. You know, it's not really for the other person. It's for ourselves. And so I just try to stay forgiving and stay joyful in the Lord and, you know, think about His returning, you know, His return. Come back and get us.
Now, I thought I heard you say that you have a therapist.
Yeah. She's awesome.
So is that...
I mean, just... awesome.
Right. Well, I had one too for like almost 5 years already, and there's nothing better. But it's not my business, but does it have what to do with your everyday life or anything from your past? Because you said that you don't think about the past anymore.
Not anything from my past. I just sometimes feel like she's my companion, you know, like she's a, you know, being in COVID now.
The voice.
Right. Hello?
Right. Yeah, we're listening.
Oh, okay. Being in COVID and everything like that, it's kind of, you know, probably everybody needs a therapist right now. It's somebody to talk to, you know. And if my insurance will cover it, why not?
Right.
And she's an awesome lady.
So you happen to be very, very lucky because I think from some of the people that have been on the show or that I know from outside of the show that have been through trauma in their lives, and I know for myself, that even though we feel like we are healed, we still have our moments. So I think you have you were gifted to be able to take that part of your life and it's gone. Because as much as I thought that door was closed in my life, there's always something that pops up as a reminder, whether it's a holiday, whether it's birthdays, you know. For me, I'm a survivor of domestic violence, and my children are survivors of abuse. And so, you know, for us, it's fresh. It's only been 4.5 years. So, we're all still getting help and, you know, but for me, every time I get into a bad place, I don't even know why I'm in a bad place. It all comes up.
Yeah, you definitely need stage therapy, and if it keeps happening, you might need to change therapy.
I have weekly therapy, and I take medication for now. But again, for me, it's still fresh, and
yeah.
I have young children. I mean, young adults.
But that's the point. But that's exactly the point, Bailey. That, you know, 4 years is wonderful, but it's 4 years. And my belief is that as you move forward, you know, you grow stronger and stronger. So you have less and less. It's not that I've escaped every issue in my life, and I don't think Pamela is saying that either. But it is, I am saying that I have a huge measure of being comfortable inside of Bill that was remarkable, because I never thought I'd be able to achieve it. And if I wasn't doing NASCA, I'd be doing something else useful with my time. And it might not be about child abuse, but I feel really comfortable. But I've been doing it a long time, and I think Pamela too. And it's, you know, 4 years is really significant. It's great, but it's 4 years, and you got to just keep, you know, be patient with yourself and just keep moving. I mean, that's the trick.
That's what I'm doing. Don't get stuck.
Yeah.
Yes. And do you have I don't want to get personal, but do you have a spiritual connection?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Oh, well, you can always call on that.
My rabbi gives a class every Wednesday morning, and it's on faith. And I always make my time to listen, because he gives me that push. He gives me that reminder that there's that there's everything's happening for a reason. Why? We don't know. Sometimes we find out later on, you know.
That's right.
But, you know, I went to group therapy immediately. That helped me tremendous. For my situation, group therapy was amazing. And it really saved me. And then I continued
What are some points you got out of it right away that helped you? Stand out.
I always tell this, when I started, I had just gotten separated, and I was like in shock and numb. My now ex would always say, I'm getting help, I want you back. And I believed him. So when I came into this room filled with women, some of them were living in the shelter there, some of them were, would come, the guy came a few nights a week, and I would listen to their stories, and I said, I think it was the first day I went, I said, my abuser is different than all of yours, because he wants to get better. And they all looked at me. And towards the end of my time there, I was there for like a year and a half, I looked at them and I said, my abusers just like never change. Even if they wanted to, they can't change. So that's one thing I learned, is that certain kind of mental illness, narcissistic, sociopathic, psychopath, personality disorders, they can't change. They can't change. And I've learned this from therapists. I mean, I've asked, and they're not capable of changing as much as they want to. They're always going to go back. And that's what happened to me, is that I kept giving him chances just so he could be a father to his children. And I didn't take him back, but I gave him chances to be in our lives. So that's one big thing that I learned is I was able to see myself in these women.
Yeah.
And we, how long just did like, you know? Like in NASCA.
How long?
I'm sorry?
Yeah. How long did you know him before you married?
A year.
How long did you know him?
A year.
Yeah.
A year. Actually, sorry. Yes. Yeah. I'm here.
Yeah, a year.
No, no.
Ladies,
I knew him a lot more.
I just want to alert you to the fact that we have about 3.5 minutes left in the show.
Yes.
We're running out of time.
Let me just finish. I'll finish just answer a question. I knew him a long time because his sister was my friend, but I dated him a year, and we were married over 20 years.
Wow.
But that's a story for another time, and I'm on one of the scans. Don't know which one.
Okay.
But, yeah. So I learned a lot of things, and I could relate to a lot of NASCA family, you know, a lot of the stories of abuse, of violence, and all of that. Because trauma is trauma.
Yeah.
Pain is pain.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Bill, how do
I
get my book, Leah?
It's gonna appear there. We're going through all the shows that we've done so far, and there's a gal that's doing that work, and then she sends it to Joe. Joe formats it and then sends it to me, and then I post it. So we're in the middle of that process right now. I did look it up, and you're not on the list yet, but we're only halfway through all the thousands of shows we've done. So it will appear,
okay.
I promise.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
It'll be under your last name, so it'll be under L for Lockridge, of course.
All right.
All right. So
okay.
I want to thank you, Pamela. I'm sure Bailey agrees with me. We really appreciate your coming on last minute and substituting for our regularly scheduled co-host. The benefit is you get an extra show out of it, and we're delighted to have had you. You did a terrific job, and I want to thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, I just
I hope
the listeners that haven't ever told their story would just, you know, try to see if they would come on. And it's very, you know, when I first came on and was telling my story, it's a little, you know, you get a little nervous. But when the co-host, you know, talk to you and lead you through it, it's not anything. You'll get right, and then you'll feel empowered.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, we have an opening on Friday night, which just sprang up too. That guest can't make it. We had a scheduled guest there for a few weeks now. So Friday night, for someone listening out there, they want to tell their story, they got to write an email to me and let me know right away. And it's not that hard. Like Pamela's saying, it's interview style. So you're not expected to stand on a stump and tell your story. You'll be asked questions and led along the way, and there'll be other people here and so forth. So, but she's right. It will also empower you. So we'll be there to help you, and we would love for additional people who are listening tonight to sign up for shows in the future. And that's about it. That's all the time we have. Bailey, I'm sure you'd like me to play the music and so forth for us.
Yes, thank you. Close us out. Thank you, Pamela.
Thank you, Bailey.
Well, again, I want to thank Pamela Elaine Lockridge from Louisiana, who is our ambassador to Alabama, for being on tonight's show, and Bailey Smith from Southeast Florida for hosting our show tonight. I'm Bill Murray. I want to thank you for being with us tonight and say may God bless you and the children of the world, and God bless adult survivors of child abuse. After all that you've done,
Blog Talk Radio.